सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। Now we're starting with a new chapter and also a new section of the Bhagavad Gita. As you know, Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters. And some teachers explain that these 18 chapters can be looked upon as made up of three sections of six chapters each. A shatka means a group of six. So first shatkam, second, third. So now we have completed 12 chapters, meaning the two groups of six chapters have been completed. Now we are entering the last group of the six chapters, the third shatkam. And what is the reason why they look upon Gita as made up of the three sections? It's explained this way, as we read in the last Sankalpa Vakya, Srimad Bhagavad Gita so Upanishad so, that Bhagavad Gita impart the same teaching that the Upanishads impart. This verse is well known. Sarvopanishado gavah togdha gopala nandanah partho vatsah sudhihi bhokta dugdham gita amrutam mahat. Some poet has said, singing the glory of the Gita, Sarvopanishado gavah. If all the Upanishads can be compared to the cows, number of cows are there. Every Upanishad is like a cow. The number of Upanishads, number of cows are there. Dogdha Gopala Nandana, Gopala Nandana. That is Lord Krishna. Is Dogdha is a milkman. So Lord Krishna is a milkman milking these cows of Upanishads. Milk is nothing but the essence that the cow has to give. Does Upanishad a cow, then the milk is essence. So Lord Krishna is a milkman who has milked the essence of the Upanishads. Dugdham, dugdham means milk. Gita Amrutam Mahat. This Gita Amrutam, this ambrosia in the form of Bhagavad Gita, is the milk. That is from the cows of the Upanishads, which milk has been brought to us by the great milkman, Lord Krishna, because he was raised as a milkman, as a cowherd boy. Partho vatsaha sudhi bhokta. They say that cow gives milk for its calf, and therefore they bring the calf and let the calf stand in front of the cow, and because of that love for the calf, the milk starts flowing in the udders of the cow. And then you can easily milk them. So here the calf is Arjuna, is the Partho Vatsaha. Vatsa means a calf. Partho means Arjuna. Arjuna is in the place of a calf. So these cows, the Upanishads, they give rise to milk, give milk, looking at the calf of Arjuna. And Lord Krishna has milked those cows. But calf gets a certain amount of milk that it needs. Cows give much more milk than a calf needs. So rest of milk is available to us. Sudhi bhokta. That bhokta, the real enjoyer of the milk, is sudhi, one who possesses a pure mind. One who has the purity of mind, who has the shraddha, the faith, who has the devotion. The seekers are those who enjoy the milk of Bhagavad Gita. And this imagery of the cow, then the calf also is very beautiful. Because the cow gives milk out of love for the calf. It is said that when the cows return home after the whole day of grazing, and then there are calves there, so cows run towards that calf. And even though there were a number of cows there, the cow knows which is her calf. Even if the cow is running to the calf, the milk is flowing through her. So this milk is coming out of this love. That's important here. And so the milk of Bhagavad Gita is out of love. Meaning that Lord Krishna is teaching Arjuna out of love and kindness and compassion. That also shows what is the basis of this teaching. Parthovatsa Sudhir Bhokta. Thus Bhagavad Gita is looked upon as the essence of all the Upanishads. And essence of the Upanishad teaching is can be expressed in one ten sentence, Tattvamasi, that thou art. You are Brahman. Or Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. So this is called Mahavakya, the major statement. It's a very short statement, that thou art Tattvamasi. Tat means that. Tat is a pronoun which indicates something which is remote. You generally use the pronoun that to indicate something which is not in front of you. For indicating something in front of you, use the pronoun this. Use the pronoun that for something which is remote. Or something that is thought to be remote. In our life, there is something which is remote and which we are struggling to achieve. As I said, that is a perfection, limitlessness, freedom. That is nothing but Brahman, the Lord, the limitless. So tat, that pronoun, stands for Brahman, stands for the limitless, stands for the Lord, whom we, knowingly or unknowingly, we are seeking in our life. So each one of us is seeking happiness, no doubt about that. And again, what kind of happiness? Unconditional happiness. Meaning that we are seeking happiness free from all conditions. We are seeking happiness free from all limitations. We are seeking not only happiness, but limitless happiness is what we are seeking. And that is indicated by tat, that which is the end, which is the goal that we are seeking. Who is seeking? I am the seeker. In our life, there is a duality of seeker and the sought. Sought is the limitless happiness, which is called Brahman, that's called God. The seeker is his individual self. And all the time I seem to be striving to reach that Brahman. Having taken for granted that what I am seeking is away from myself. Thus I am seeking that happiness everywhere. But not where it is, which is in myself. So Upanishads reveal this fundamental truth of our life. Tattvamasi, in fact, what you are seeking is your own self. That limitlessness, the happiness you are seeking is you. So tattvam asi. Asi means art. So this statement is, our Swamiji calls, is the great equation. So this equation, very two things are equated, tat and tvam. You are that, thou art that. You, who looks upon the self as a limited being, as a seeker, as a needy person, as a helpless, helpless creature, that is my perception of myself. You are not what you take yourself to be. You are something quite different. You are, in fact, what you are seeking to be. The limitless that you are seeking to be is you already. That you are limitless. You are not a limited, helpless, helpless creature. You are the limitless. So this is the truth that is revealed by Upanishads. Understand that the most important entity in my life is myself. The most important entity in my life is myself. And that is why Upanishads only address me. Because I don't care who God is and where God is, etc. It's okay. There is some god someplace there, it's all right, it's of academic interest. What is important to me is, who am I? And what is my interest? He says, you are limitless. So Upanishadic teaching is much centered upon the self. Not self-centered, centered upon the self. Self is subject matter of the teaching of Upanishads. So this statement, called Mahavakya, the major statement, which reveals identity between Jiva and Brahman, individual self and Brahman are limitless, which reveals that the one who looks upon the self as limited is in fact the limitless. The major statement consisting of three words, they say is revealed or elaborated in Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is an elaboration of this simple little statement. And so the teachers explain to us. The first six chapters explain one word. See, in order for us to understand the meaning of the statement or a sentence, we should understand the meaning of each word comprising the sentence. So this sentence comprises of three words. That thou art, or you are Brahman. For us to understand the meaning of the statement, we should ask, what is meant by you? What is meant by Brahman? What is meant by you are Brahman? What is meant by the equation? You are Brahman, or you are limitless. You is what is myself. Limitless is limitless. What is meant by are? What is meant by my being limitless? This also is understood. Therefore, these three words are elaborated in the three sections of Bhagavad Gita. It said that the first six chapters revealed the nature of the self, the individual. Second six chapters reveal the nature of Ishvara. The third six chapters reveal the identity between the two. So, Karma Yoga, Bhakti, and Jnanam. First six chapters talk of karma, which is means of knowing myself. Second six chapters talk of bhakti, devotion, means of knowing Ishvara. The third chapter talk of jnanam, means of knowing the identity. So now we are starting the third chapter. Therefore the mode of discussion changes completely. Between 12th chapter and 13th chapter, there is no connection at all. In the 12th chapter, the last six chapters talked about Ishvara and bhakti, devotion to Ishvara, and bhakta, the devotee. God, devotion, and devotee, that was the subject matter of these middle six chapters. Self, and then the karma yoga. The self and the karma yoga were the subject matters of the first six chapters. And now the identity and the knowledge is the subject matter of the last six chapters. So, these first two verses, the 13th chapter, are like Mahavakya. They reveal the identity. So, what Lord Krishna says in the very first and the second verses is enough for us to become free from all our complexes. Enough for us to become free from all our problems. The first verse tells us that, look, the problems do not belong to you. You think that you are an unhappy person. You think that you are a limited being. You think that you are, there is sorrow in you, unhappiness in you, that's why you think that you are a doer and enjoyer. That's not what you are. All the samsara, all the sorrow, all the limitations, not sorrow, all the limitations really belongs not to you, belongs to your personality. So we were talking in the earlier class also of this combination of the person and the personality. How each one of us is a person manifesting through a personality. So very first verse tells us here the distinction between the person from the personality. So let us read the first verse here. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. idam shariram kaunteya kshetramityabhidhiyate etadyo vetti tam prahuh kshetrajna iti tat kshetrajna iti tadvidah. Is that the first verse or is the verse before that?
There's a verse before that.
There's a verse before that, okay. So, the text that we generally have, those texts begin with this verse. However, some teachers say that there's a verse before this. All of a sudden, Lord Krishna starts talking about kshetra, kshetrajna. These words have not been used earlier. So how come all of a sudden Lord Krishna starts talking about these entities? Therefore, they think that there is a verse before this of the nature of a question from Arjuna. So I think we should read that also.
Arjuna uvacha
prakritim purusham chaiva
kshetram
kshetrajnameva cha etad veditam icchami jnanam jneyam cha keshava. Arjuna asks this question. The second line says, etad veditam icchami. Icchami, I desire. Vedutam icchami, I desire to know. Etad this. Etad vedutam icchami, I desire to know this. What is it? Prakritim purusham chaiva. O Lord, what is prakriti and what is purusha? Kshetram kshetrajnam eva cha. What is kshetra? What is kshetrajna? Jnanam jneyam cha keshava. What is jnanam? What is jnayam? Where did he get these words that he alone knows in Aminya? Because some of these words are not used so far. The word prakriti, purusha, kshetra, he must have heard it elsewhere, I guess. We assume that Arjuna must have been exposed to other lectures and teaching and reading and whatever, and he must have come to know. Many of these words are used by the Sankhyas. Prakriti and Purusha is a typical, technical words used by the followers of Sankhya. Jnanam, of course, we use. Jnanam is that, Jnanam means the knowledge or means of knowledge. Jnanam is that which is to be known. Prakriti means matter. They translate as matter and spirit. Prakriti means matter or, and Purusha is the consciousness. So what is matter and what is consciousness? Kshetram and kshetrajna. What is kshetram? Is a field. Kshetrajna is knower of the field. What's the field and what's the knower of the field? Jnanam jnayam. Lord, what is to be known? That is jnayam. Jnana, what's the means of knowing that? Etat vidam icchami. All this I wish to know. So it is presumed here that there may be a verse like this, which of course does not appear in the standard publications. And we do not find Shankaracharya having commented on a verse like this. So it is believed that perhaps this may be an added verse. We don't know. Without this verse, Bhagavad Gita has only how many verses? 700. With this verse, 701 verses. So by 700 is a good round number also. So without this verse, Bhagavad Gita has 700 verses. There are other editions also. You find some 40, 45 more verses also, by the way. Some editions of Bhagavad Gita are available from Kashmir and other places where we find more verses. But again, since they are not commented upon by Shankaracharya and other teachers, therefore, we believe that they have been, perhaps they did not belong to the original edition. But whatever. Imagine that Arjuna asks this question. That's a justification for Lord Krishna to begin. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Then Lord Krishna says, usually You would imagine that in a dialogue between Lord Krishna and Arjuna, Lord Krishna would generally respond to a question or a doubt that Arjuna may have. But this and many other chapters open without any question of Arjuna. So then we imagine that there must be reason, that a question may have occurred in mind of Arjuna, which we may not have expressed, articulated in words. So sometimes a question or a doubt arises in our mind, we articulate through words. But sometimes the teacher knows what is happening in the mind of the student, or teacher knows what the student needs to know, put it this way. On account of what was stated earlier, this question would arise in mind of students. Or, to understand what I said earlier, the student should know this. And that is how the teacher volunteers to begin next lecture without any question on the part of me, the student. Thus we find many chapters here where Lord Krishna himself volunteers to give a discourse. If you imagine a question on the part of Arjuna, then of course Lord Krishna is replying. If you do not imagine that question, then Lord Krishna is volunteering to give a discourse because Lord Krishna feels or knows that now is time for Arjuna to know this. Lord Krishna has elaborately described what's the nature of self. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit ajo nitya shashvatoyam puranah. The self is free from birth and death and all modifications, changeless. So that is the nature of self described. What is the nature of Ishvara? Matta paratram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya. He dhananjaya, he Arjuna, there is nothing other than me. Whatever is I. So what is Ishvara? Is a creator, sustainer, dissolver, omniscient, omnipotent. And Jiva is the individual self. What's the relation between them? So having unfolded elaborately the nature of the individual self, having elaborately also unfolded the nature of Ishvara, the universal self, now Lord Krishna thinks it necessary to reveal also the equation between two. Hey Arjuna, what is the universal self? Is you the individual self? For that, this verse begins by distinguishing the self from the non-self. Because we look upon ourselves as one entity. When I use the pronoun I, in the pronoun I include many things. I include the consciousness that I am, but I also include my body and sense organs and mind and so many things are included along with I, like an appendage. And so in I, so many things are included. Meaning that I think that this is one entity. Consciousness and body and sense organs and mind, all of these comprise one entity. That's what I am. Thus, I have a perception of myself. Because I have taken for granted that this body is myself. The sense organs are myself. The mind is myself. So habitual, this is called a habit. I am born with a habit of taking this body-mind complex as myself. Meaning that I equate myself with my body, with my mind. I am body is I am this body. I am this mind. This is my perception of myself. And this perception creates many conclusions or opinions about myself. This perception that I am the body, or I am the mind, I am the sense organs, creates a number of opinions about myself. And none of that opinion is an opinion that reflects my true nature. Every opinion only reflects a limitedness of the self. Thus, when I say that, I am this body, well, the body was born. So I take for granted that I was born. The body is growing. I am growing. The body will become old. I will become old. The body will die. I will die. If I was comfortable with this opinion about myself, there's no problem. Then I was born and I will die. What's the big deal about it? It's okay. Suppose I can say that. I know old age is creeping, Swamiji, you know. The grey hair is coming, this is coming, the wrinkles are coming. Okay. No problem. I know that someday I have to die. If I will be comfortable with this opinion about myself, no problem. But I am not, unfortunately. I am not comfortable with my opinion that I am going to die someday, that I am a mortal being, I am subject to death. I am not comfortable. That I am growing old, I am not comfortable. A day will come when I will not be, that I will not exist, I am not comfortable. I am not comfortable that I will not exist. I cannot accept my non-existence. I always want to be. There is an inherent desire also. There are two things about us. One is habitual, other is inherent. What is habitual? Habitual is to take the body as myself. That's a habit. What is inherent about me? That is inherently a love for being, a love for existence. I love to be always be. If I had my choice, if I had the freedom, I would never want not to be. Man bhuya da bhuya se panchadashi. Everybody thinks this. That bhuyasam, I am, may I always be. I never not be. I never not be, may always be. This is an inherent desire. Think about it. A natural love for existence, natural love for my existence, that love is inherent, natural. I want to be. I hate not to be. When love is there, hatred also is there. I hate the idea that I will not be. No, Swamiji, there are many people who like the idea of not being there. I wish I was not there. I wish this life comes to an end. There are some people, Swami, you commit suicide. How do you say that everybody has love for existence? Why should a person commit suicide? Sometimes people are waiting for that. When am I going to get over with this? Why is it so? Does it show a love for non-existence? No, it does not. So we should qualify this statement, I love to be. I love to be pleased self. I love to be and love to be happy. So I love a happy self. I love to be happy. Whenever a person feels there's no scope for happiness to occur in my life, life is full of pain or so many hardships, so many other emotional problems, and a person has lost all the hope or ever becoming free from this pain, then a person thinks of committing suicide not because he doesn't want to be, but because he or she doesn't want to be unhappy. So it is the dislike for unhappiness or pain that is what drives a person to end the life, not a dislike for being, but a dislike for unhappiness. In fact, even the suicide also shows only the love for one's own self, the pleased self. So I am born with a love to be. I am born with a love to be happy. But when is happiness? When can I be happy? I can be happy only when I am free. I can be happy only when I am free from all limitations, otherwise I can't be happy. Chandogya Upanishad says, Yo vai bhuma tat sukham, nalpe sukham asti. Yo vai bhuma, that which is abundant, limitless, that is sukham, that is happiness. So Chandogya Upanishad equates limitlessness with happiness and says, nalpe sukham asti. There cannot be happiness in anything that is limited. A limited thing cannot have happiness. So happiness cannot be in limited thing. So when I say that I love to be happy, in other words, I'm saying that I love to be free from every limitation. I love to be limitless. You may not have thought about, but happiness means nothing limited can make me really happy. I settle with it, that's okay. Swami, what can I do? Okay. I didn't get in that college, I got okay, all right, I settle. But I wish to be free. I wish to be able to do what I have my own definition of freedom. What is freedom? To be able to do what I want to do. Nah, you know. There should be no obstacle to fulfilling my desire. I have my own definition of freedom. But ultimately freedom is when you are free from all limitations, free from helplessness. I hate to be helpless. That's what causes a lot of pain. I don't want to be helpless. I don't want to be dependent. I want to be free. Free from all helplessness, all dependence, all limitations. But when I equate myself with the body or my mind, what do I feel? This body is an insignificant little thing. My mind is an insignificant little thing. What is body in the whole cosmos? It's nothing. You can't even see it in a map if there is a map of globe. Even America is hard to find, and from there, you know, Pennsylvania, and Salisbury, Gurukulam, and this place, you can't find it. Insignificant. So unfortunately, on account of equating myself with the body and the mind, and regardless of how intelligent I am, how smart I am, how accomplished I am, whatever I am still insignificant. However knowledgeable I am, I know that I cannot be all-knowing. However mighty I am, I know I cannot be almighty. And therefore, because of equating myself with this body-mind complex, I constantly suffer from a sense of insignificance, and therefore I constantly strive to be a significant person. Thus, equating myself with body-mind-sense complex creates so many complexes in me. One complex is, I am mortal, someday I am going to die, I am subject to death. Causes a lot of fear. They say the fear of death is fear of all mothers, mother of all fears. But may not be mother of all fears, but then fear of death is definitely a significant fear. We have fear of many other kinds, of course. Fear of being humiliated, I don't want to be humiliated. Fear of failure, I don't want failure. Fear of an insult, I don't want to be, you know. So there are many other fears there. We are generally afraid, fearful. Every situation, many situations, I generally operate from the platform of fear and always on lookout, always trying to, you know, protect myself. So I'm always in a combating mode, ninja, as Swami says, like a ninja. Always ready to fight. I feel the whole world is out there to attack me, and I have to protect myself. So constant fear, sense of insignificance, this fear of death or the sense of mortality, sense of limitation. Understand, limitation means unhappiness. You don't need anything else to be unhappy. The moment I feel a sense of limited, I'm unhappy. Moment I feel helpless, I'm unhappy. Moment I feel dependent, that is unhappiness. You don't need anything else to be unhappy. Just sense of limitedness, sense of dependence, sense of helplessness, that is unhappiness. Thus, really speaking, I am constantly suffering from unhappiness, suffering from sadness. Our Swami says every human being is chronically sad. Sadness is chronically there. It is the bad dog, it's in the background of everything. I come across generally from a platform of sadness, helplessness, fear. Look at my behavior. You will always see this. Trying to please others so that they accept me, they respect me, they approve of me, they don't reject me. Trying to get approval of others, trying to please others. Don't be careful. You know, don't displease him. So keep him happy, keep him cheerful. Why? Not for him, for myself. If the fellow is not cheerful, then I will not be cheerful, that's why. What kind of life we are living? The life which all what I do is sensual, most of what I do, it all emerges from this platform of fear, platform of insignificance, platform of limitedness, platform of need, helplessness. That's what I am. That is my perception of myself. If this was reality about me, nobody can change it. Even God, Lord Krishna cannot say, if I was really insignificant, if I was mortal, if I was limited, if I was unhappy, if sadness was my nature, nobody can change it. Prakrutehe anyatha bhava na kathanchit bhavishyati. A simple statement is, a thing can, the nature of something can never change. Therefore, if limitedness was my nature, it can never change. But one thing about nature is that I'm always comfortable with my nature. A thing is always comfortable with its nature. Meaning fire is comfortable being hot. Fire has no problem with heat. But ice is comfortable with being cold. It has problem with heat. Fire has problem with cold. Everything is comfortable with its nature. Am I comfortable with myself? No, that means that is not my nature. Am I comfortable being limited? No, that means limitedness cannot be my nature. Otherwise I would have been comfortable. Am I comfortable in being that I am? Am I comfortable? Yes, that I am. Comfortable, no problem. I'm a conscious being, no problem. I'm comfortable. But I am needy, I'm not comfortable. So what I am not comfortable cannot be my nature. Nobody ever complains for what is natural. People complain for what is not natural. As our Swami would say, this man goes to an ophthalmologist and complains. To a doctor, I see. So doctor, well, you know, he thinks he's a patient, you know, says, see, what do you see? You see two where there is one? He says, no, I see two where there is two. You see one when there is two? No, I see one where there is one, two where there is two, three where there is three. Then you don't see what is at a distance. I see what is at a far distance. You cannot see at night. I can see very clear at night also. You cannot recognize colors. I can recognize all colors. What's your problem? I see. So doctor says, I see, you know. You're in the wrong place. You should be two blocks next time, you know, two stories above. There's another person there. A therapist, that's where you need to go. But this is an imagine. Nobody will, I don't think anybody will go to a doctor and complain that I see. I'm comfortable with being seen. If I cannot say I'm not comfortable, to see is my nature, therefore I'm comfortable. I'm not comfortable, do not see, then I'm uncomfortable. When the patient goes to the doctor, I feel hungry. He says, what's wrong with that, you know? If you're not hungry, then let me know. I sleep too much. The doctors don't find any problem with sleep. We may find, but this is sleepy is nature. Sleep, how many? 8 hours, that's good for you. Yoga will say no more than 5 hours, and they create all the complexes in us, you know. Swami, I sleep for 7 hours, is no good, but yoga says no more than 5 hours. Doctors are, 8 hours, good, 9 hours, even better. Unless a drug-induced sleep or something. I'm uncomfortable in being limited. Now, thus, as I said, a human being is a sad being. What creates sadness? My perception of myself. Of course, this we have said a million times, because every class begins with this only. But still, I guess we have to say that beginning this 13th chapter. Because I am not comfortable with myself, I suffer from an inner discomfort with myself. Therefore, my constant attempt is to avoid myself. So many of my activities are meant to avoid my own self, escape from myself. So many activities are escape distractions. And the world helps us in doing that. Every 6 months they come with a new model. So to make it convenient to escape from myself, that I don't have to face myself, I don't have to confront myself. So a new model of this phone and that phone and iPhone and iPad and iPad. There's a strange little spelling. There's a different gadget. This is a gadget maker. He's the wealthiest person, a gadget maker, because people want gadgets. Tuk, 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 tuk. So that I do not have to think, worry about myself. I don't have to confront myself, keep myself busy. There's nothing wrong in using an instrument because it's an empowerment. But if it becomes an addiction, then there is something wrong. Soon everything becomes an addiction. It all comes as a great gift and a luxury and becomes an addiction. Addiction means that I have become a slave. Meaning, I have been escaping from myself. But anyway, thus, this is our problem. And our life is nothing but a process of constantly trying to become free from the inner discomfort. All my activities are meant to make myself pleased, happy, comfortable. I seem to get happiness for a while, again the discomfort comes back, again I do something else, again it comes back. This is going on from the beginning last time, from one embodiment to the other. So, this is where Vedanta comes in. And Vedanta is the only thing in the world which teaches us this. Nobody else teaches this. As clearly as Vedanta teaches, that you are not what you take yourself to be. You are what you want to be. You already are. You are looking in the wrong place. The reason why you don't find happiness is because you look in the wrong place. You search everywhere but not search where it is. Like the story of this thief searching for the money. A thief is traveling in a train with a very wealthy person, traveling from Madras those days to Delhi with a lot of cash money. Why do you go to Delhi for cash money? There must be some reason. So this man had a big briefcase, a lot of cash money, 1,000 rupee notes. So this thief came to know that this man is traveling a lot of money. He was a thug from Delhi, they're well-known people. And he made sure that he gets a seat in the same first-class coupe compartment as this. So there are two passengers traveling in the coupe. This man, very rich man in the lower berth, this man in the upper berth. And his corner is there always watching. And rich man also seems to be a very stupid fellow. In the afternoon, he takes out his briefcase, opens the briefcase. And they're sitting side by side, so he opens the lid of the case so that fellow could not see what is happening behind the case, and he takes out his big, all these currency notes and counts the packets. He doesn't count simple notes, packets of 1,000 rupee notes, you know. Each packet is 100 bills, you know, so it's 100,000. So many there. But that fellow is a thief, he knows. He from the corner, he says, okay, that's where the money is, okay. So he's waiting for the night to come. To escape the whole thing, comes the night. Evening dinner is over. This man goes to bathroom to wash his face, change his clothes, comes back. This fellow also goes. Lights are all switched off. Soon this rich man starts snoring. So now this thief who is sleeping in the upper berth knows, now is the time to go down. Comes down, take out the briefcase. He has all kinds of keys with him. He opens it, doesn't find anything. What happened? I saw it in the afternoon. Maybe in the suitcase, doesn't find it. All pieces of baggage he opened one by one, did not find the money. Very disappointed. He went back to his berth. Next day came, This is a long journey those days. Trains were rather slow. And so next day also, afternoon comes. Said, that man opens his briefcase again. And behind the lid is counting. So what happened? I looked for this money last night, I couldn't find. Where is he hiding? So maybe he's hiding on his person. That's one place I had not seen last night. Wait for the next night. Same scenario. This man is snoring. Other man comes down from the upper berth very quietly. Searches through all his luggage, doesn't find it. Searches through his person. He must be very skilled. The sleeping man doesn't know that he's being searched. Nowhere to find. Highly disappointed. This was the last chance. Because next morning, now that Delhi is coming. In half an hour, Delhi station will come. This rich man opens his briefcase again and starts counting. Now this thief, you know, he was totally frustrated. And he said, so he saluted this man. He says, you are my guru. I am well known thief from Delhi. But I must declare that you are my guru. I have come specially to take away your money. But I don't want your money. I just want to know where were you hiding your money. That's it. Where did you hide the money? I looked everywhere. So you looked everywhere except where it was. Where do you hide the money? Under your pillow. He looked everywhere, not where it is. So man looks for happiness everywhere. There are 8.4 million embodiments, they say. Maybe many more actually. Now because I know new ones are coming up, I don't know. 8.4 million embodiments. You have traveled in all of them, you know. So you're not satisfied with human, whatever the human birth embodiment can give you, the kind of pleasures. So let me see how the dog feels, you know. Become a dog and a cat and a rat and everything you become. Why? Just to feel the pleasure, the gratification that they may be feeling. All these we have tried. And still, we are as incomplete, as needy as before. That's Vedanta says. But look, you looked everywhere, not in one place. You have not looked at yourself. You have taken for granted that you are a limited being. You are an insignificant creature. You're a helpless, helpless creature. That's a perception about yourself. That is a wrong perception. Look at yourself. So Vedanta makes us look at ourselves. And the very basic truth about us that is revealed in the very first verse is that you are a complex entity. You're not a simple entity. You, as you are right now, is a complex entity. In fact, you are simple, but you have made yourself very complex. By identifying, by taking to yourself what you are not. So first verse tells us that we are in fact a union of these two entities, the self and the non-self, the person and the personality. Here the words used are kshetrajna and kshetra. Later on Lord Krishna will use the word purusha prakriti. In 7th chapter Lord Krishna used the word apara prakriti. The 15th chapter, Lord Krishna used the word, you know, akshara and akshara purusha. Meaning that this theme keeps coming up again and again. Lord Krishna says that you actually are a very simple person, but you become very complex on account of identifying with your body-mind complex. Therefore, the first verse gives us a very basic equation here, distinguishing the self from the non-self. So Lord Krishna says, idam shariram kaunteya kshetram iti abhidhyate. Hey Kaunteya, O son of Kunti, he Arjuna. Idam shariram, idam means this. So pronoun idam means this. We use the pronoun this to indicate something which is evident to us. This book, this table. So what is evident to you? What is experienced by you? Shariram, this body, that is an object of your experience. Idam shariram. The word sharira, sharira means body. Shirya manatva shariram, that which is subject to disintegration is called shariram. Or here, Lord Krishna says, idam shariram kauntya kshetram iti abhidhyate. Hey kauntya, this is called kshetram. Kshetram is a field, actually. Khet in Hindi. Kshetra is field. So Shankaracharya explains the word kshetra in different ways. For us to understand of what this body is. So kshatatranat kshetram. That which protects me from injury is kshetram. One meaning of the word kshetra, derivative meaning is that which protects us from injury. Or kshayat kshetram, from different roots. That which is subject to perishing, that which perishes is called kshetram. Kshanat kshetram, that which is, which wastes away, which gets disintegrated is also called kshetram. So that which is perishable is also kshetram, that which disintegrates also is kshetram, that which protects you from injury also is kshetram. Or this body is like a field. So what is a field? A field is where you sow seeds and you get the fruits. So here also we sow the seeds of karma and get the fruits karma phala. In that sense also, since this human body is a karma bhumi, is an embodiment where we have the free will, we perform deliberate actions and gain the results. In that sense also it is called kshetram, a field. Idam shariram. Hey Arjuna, this body is kshetram iti abhidhyate. It is called kshetram. Here kshetra means the field or the object of knowledge. Here Arjuna, this body is an object of your knowledge, object of your awareness. Etadyo vetitam prahuhu kshetrajnya iti tadvidah. Etadyo veti, one knows the body. Kshetrajnya is called kshetrajnya. Kshetram janati iti kshetrajnya. One who is aware of the kshetra is called kshetrajnya. The body is called kshetra. There is some other conscious being who is aware of the body. So Arjuna, understand that you actually are made of these two entities. You are not one entity. So when I use the pronoun I include both. The kshetra and kshetrajnya, I am including both of them. The body also is included in I. So Lord Krishna, no, the body is not the I. Body is the object of knowledge. One very simple rule is being told here, that the knower is always different from the known. This flower is the object of knowledge. I am the knower. The knower has to be different from the object of knowledge. So Lord Krishna says that, you are made of these two entities, the knower and the known. The body is the known and the self is a knower. Thus learn to distinguish the self which is knower from the body that is known. Thus this chapter begins with what we call the viveka, the discrimination of atma anatma viveka, discriminating self from the non-self. We'll continue our discussion in the next class. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Shankaram Shankaracharyam Keshavam Vadarayanam Sutra Bhashyakrutau Vande Bhagavantau punah punah Ishvaro Guru Atmedi Murti Veda Vibhagine Vyoma Vadvyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Vyo Namaha Hari Om.